SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good and cold Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, and everything pretty much as predicted has coming to pass. This just Arctic air and dangerous weather, particularly through the Midwest, making its way east, and the cancellations are rolling in. About a half hour ago, NYRA made it official. About tomorrow, they'll cancel not just the racing at Aqueduct tomorrow, but no training either. And that includes even the jogging barn. basically keeping everybody just walk the horses tomorrow and call it a day. Everybody can take it a little bit easier and keep exercise riders and grooms and hot walkers and everybody at least, well, the hot walkers and the grooms, they do their thing, but it'll be a limited duty tomorrow in New York. And as we talked yesterday with Andy, if you were listening in the last 90 minutes or whatever it was, 2 hours ago, I guess, with Andy, we anticipated that it would be the Friday card that would take on the that NYRA Betts pick five carryover and the pick six carryover. So we got at least a glance at that with Andy looking toward Friday. And then today, certainly the racing office is open, and we'll talk a little bit more about the expectations for the Withers. But those cancellations, Charlestown yesterday, Eric Zimney got out in front of it, and Charlestown canceled for tonight. I have not seen, I'll poke around for Mahoning Valley and Penn National. I'm going to assume they'll both, Ohio, I think I saw zero or seven. I think I saw seven, a high of seven for the Dayton area and so forth, so or further north to up to Mahoning. And so I'm going to guess that both Penn and Mahoning Valley will cancel. So what will that let's take a look, actually. What will that leave us for for Wednesday? It should make for a fairly big day. Gulfstream in Tampa, and even though it's cool down there, and actually our friend Papo Morales is confirming that Penn not only canceled for tonight, but they'll cancel the rest of the week as well. That means the Thursday edition, and I think they run, do they run Friday night? I don't think they run on Fridays. No, they don't. So tomorrow and today and tomorrow, they're both KO'd at Grantsville. But today's action, you better look to the warm weather climbs, and that's Gulfstream, Tampa, Turf Paradise, and Delta Downs. A very narrow Wednesday of action. And there is actually a race at Gulfstream that is really interesting. When Seth joins us later, I'm going to assume that he will have looked at this. That seventh race that came up with Graham Motion, because he had the French bred mizzenmast gelding Trinity mizzenmast out of a Monjou mare, and Johnny riding for Graham, and 15-1 for Trinity. But there are a lot of older horses in this seventh race, a mile and a 16th maiden special weight, and there's a bunch of horses here that you would have thought a maiden victory would have come their way, particularly Rhode Island, a horse that we talked about at least a couple of times, a Joe Allen homebred with Shug, and another Monjou mare, actually, Baroness Richter, by Giants Causeway. And Rhode Island has had a bunch of close calls and, you know, has certainly run fast enough to break his maiden. He's a four-year-old colt, and this is one of those horses that once he gets it done, it could, you know, still have a nice career. He's tried five times, and you would think that Rhode Island still has a career ahead of him. He's the 2-1 favorite, Argonne, for Jim Bond and Bill Clifton. I had mentioned Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago, for Catherine Day Phillips and the FitzHenrys. This is a homebred of theirs, a Blame gelding. Only started once, though. Showed up in December at the end of the Woodbine meet and got his debut out of the way. Brian Lynch has got one for Uphill. Repair the World, an arch, 12-1. And he also actually had run a race last year in March before he was sidelined that looked good enough to win. And Cassie, Mark, there's both Cassies on hand here. Battle of Memphis, a declaration of war four-year-old for Mark Cassie, and the interesting combination of Kinsman and Gary Barber. One-time starter, debuted earlier in January, and, you know, may still have a career ahead of him. He's 4-1. Silver Shield for Norm Cassie. A Medaglia d'Oro out of the Wonderful Dream Supreme. How about that? Isn't that funny? And this one went through the ring. It's a Kinsman bred, of course, out of Dream Supreme. But I think one of the, yeah, the Hank Steinbrenner is still involved with Box Stables, partnered up. And then there's Gramps Horse we talked about. Mrs. Weber's got the homebred out of the Wonderful My Typhoon, talking about premium broodmares and families. This is a Tappet gelding, five-year-old, that made two starts at the end of last year and has been obviously a super riptide, a horse that Mrs. Weber, you know, and I'm sure Mark Cassie, you know, thought, you know, was going to be something with that breeding. My Typhoon has been slightly frustrating for Live Oak. She has not been the font that you would have hoped out of Urban Sea. Bernardino, the Patio Prado, Georgia Brew, and Farone Stables, also a one-time starter, showed up at Saratoga last summer. And finally, First Commander for Kieran and Godolphin, another Medaglia d'Oro out of Amazon Corps. There's a stake, Mayor. And this is a fascinating field. I mean, here's 10 horses. You know, you wonder, it's one of those scenarios. What could have been when you look at this lineup? These are 4- and 5-year-olds that just things haven't gone right. Virtually every one of these was expected to, you know, have a real career. So there may still be time, but they better hurry up, as you sometimes, that's a comment sometimes I see in closer looks. Speaking of horses cut out and the expectations, well, the sale action yesterday got underway. We got day two of OBS today at Ocala, and a Golden Sense colt, the unraced three-year-old, by Golden Sense, was the top seller. And $200,000, Susan Montaigne, SBM Training and Sales, and apparently two undisclosed partners, and this horse is going to go straight to Brad Cox at Oaklawn. And certainly cut a nice picture, this Golden Sense. And Montaigne quoted as, you know, saying that she liked the breeze and liked him afterwards, pulling him out of the stall. And he had the 44 flat half mile. Holy cow. Wow. That was a Monday at the Undertak. Consigned by Woodside Ranch. And what a nice pinhook this was. A $10,000 Phasig October sale yearling. And then he came back through in April of last year in the OBS two-year-old sale. So this one, here's a nice example. $10,000. Then sold for $100,000. And now $200,000. There were a few other that will head out to some barns. Then there were some of the babies, some of the short yearlings. Top price, $75,000. A distorted humor. Early on, I had it on the screen the first 30 or 40 hips, and was watching, and then headed out in another direction during the afternoon. So I'm looking at some of these results for the first time. So this was the select portion, and the open session starts at 11 o'clock this morning. And they'll pick up the ball at hip 351. And they go about 300 more to sell today. And numbers were good. Numbers were good again. The demand is there. I mean, it's no news at this point. All right? Sid Fernando, hour two today. Pete is going to join us right after this break here. And, of course, he zipped across the ocean to the ATR telecast and simulcast that they did of Pegasus Day. So, and I saw where Pete, while he was there, he ran a half marathon, or what did he have, or a 10K or a 5K? I don't know. I saw he slipped in a, I don't know if that was Sunday morning. We'll find out. I saw he sent a picture. He was wearing one of those bib numbers. So lots of stuff. And Pete will officially, I guess maybe I'll save it. Am I slipping this in? Pete's going to join us in Vegas. There had been, we weren't sure, but it looks set now. So he will co-chair with cameos from Seth Merrow. Seth's going to Vegas for the first time for Capital OTB, whose coverage has become very far-flung. They're sending Seth. Seth's like a cosmonaut. Send him out there. He's like Laika. The Astrodog. But Seth will be there, and Rich Eng, and Hammer. I talked to Hammer the other, was that last night or night before? Hammer's going to come to Vegas. We're going to have a riot. And how much fun was the conversation with Preston Sims? The stories about these lucky horseshoes at Gulfstream, they're coming out of the woodwork. Somebody else said on Sunday they bought a horseshoe, and after a bad Saturday, they had a big Sunday. Can't make it up. Pete Fornatel joins us next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel, and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
In love, sageless, the winner never comes. In love, sageless, the mother's milk, they young, but I can keep running, no, I can keep running.
We're back at the races. The wonderful St. Vincent, Pete Fornatale is joining us. In fact, I think she just was in New York, and I would have loved to have. Tomorrow or Friday, tickets go on sale for Death Cab, who's coming to town as well. And I think are out at the Tennis Center, and I would like to go. I think it's in June. Pete is back in the USA after a hectic trip abroad.
Just a weekend. I confused so many people saying I was traveling to cover the Pegasus. I had all these folks saying, "Oh, let's meet up. We're in Florida." No. I'm covering the Pegasus, but I'm doing so from West London, not from Hallandale Beach, unfortunately for me. Though, I guess, it wasn't exactly gorgeous weather in Florida either, but obviously it would have been amazing to be on site. But hey, not a bad second was to be there. Saturday night, had a lot of fun on with Sean Boyce and Jason Weaver talking about all the action from Gulfstream Park. And then, was right back on the plane and got back here, starting to know how some of these real broadcasters feel when they have to do their gigs, just going in and out to far-flung places for short visits. But it was a lot of fun, and I'm happy to report that I'm going to be doing some more written coverage for the Sky Sports Racing partner online at theraces.com, covering the run-up to the Kentucky Derby for them for the first time. I've written previews in the past for them of the big races, but this will be the first time I'm covering the ins and outs of the scenes, and that should be going up there today, which will be a lot of fun.
Very cool. And did I see that you ran in a 5K or something?
I did a 10K. It's
you're nuts.
it was a little chilly. Well, the really silly part of it was just how far it was. It was far enough away from where I was staying that I could have gotten to the former Yugoslavia before I got to East London on Sunday morning. But felt good out there. We'll talk about this more, but it's basically a prep race because I'm doing in March the London Half Marathon for charity for Make-A-Wish UK. I'm going to be having a Just Giving page, which is almost ready to debut, should be up and out in the world, and obviously I will be knocking on the doors, metaphorically, of At The Races listeners to contribute to this great charity. And yeah, I'll be doing the half marathon. I'm going to be doing on my show, the In The Money Players podcast, as part of the donations, some sort of 50-50 type raffle, but instead of getting a raffle ticket, you have to guess my final time. So that's going to be fun as well. And I'll be, it's not all ready to debut yet, but obviously I'll share the information when the appropriate time comes, and folks can follow along on the InTheMoneyPodcast.com blog as well. Should be a lot of fun, and it's all for a great cause.
Really nice. Well done. Good job. Very impressed. Well, since you went that far and we're talking and keeping track of the Pegasus action and Saturday's card at Gulfstream, what's your reaction? And I'm curious what your cohort's reaction was to everything that went on.
Absolutely. We had a great night in there. It's such a cool team put together, and everybody was super impressed, of course, with City of Light. It turned into the race we wanted to see as they turned for home, and Accelerate made that move up to the throat latch. But seasoned observers watching the jockeys' respective hands knew what was going on, and what was going on was City of Light putting on just a tour de force performance, and it was just so exciting to see. This is a horse who's I've been a fan of for a very long time. Through this horse, have become friendly with Michael McCarthy, who was a guest on our show yesterday. Folks can check that out as well. And felt very close to this horse for his whole run, and it was great to see him go out a winner. And I didn't think that Accelerate lost too much in defeat. This was just a case of finding a rival who was just so good on the day, confirmed that form from Arkansas earlier in the year, and just it was awesome. Is it not a ton? I don't have anything too creative other than how good was that horse, and what a great job McCarthy did getting him ready for another huge performance on Breeders' Cup Saturday, or excuse me, Pegasus Saturday.
Well, and I think all of that, you know, all of that is the universal view, and you know, we had Michael on Monday, and I think one thing that was echoed by Jay Hovde in his piece, basically saying, you know, if there's one disappointment here, it's that we're not going to be able to see him the rest of the year, because right, there's really no telling what a horse like this. These are unique types that you know are fast enough to win at an elite level, going 7/8, and then are able to, you know, to stretch out. And I wasn't going to press Michael on it because it doesn't matter. But you know, he did say he didn't want to limit the expectation of how successful City of Light could have been, you know, going mile and a quarter again, because obviously if they were going to be able to campaign this year, they would have arced toward the Breeders' Cup Classic, and that would have been an intriguing, you know, next season for him. But this run between the Malibu and Saturday, that's about as robust and as, you know, as energetic a campaign as you're going to see from, you know, an American racehorse from 7 to 9 furlongs. This was a serious, serious horse.
It was terrific. It did. I mean, okay, in terms of figures and in terms of getting the full mile and a quarter, you can't say, oh, it's just like Ghost Zapper. But there were elements of it that are Ghost Zapper-esque. And I believe that under the right circumstances somewhere along the line, the 10 furlongs may have been within his grasp. Obviously, I don't think it's what he wanted to do the most or anything. I don't think that it necessarily would have worked out successfully had they decided to go for the Classic instead of the Dirt Mile this year. But especially from a breeding point of view, which is, I guess, what really matters now, I see no reason why the bloodline won't allow the progeny to go that far based on some of the other sires we've seen and the success they've had with the right types, with the right female family, getting horses to go the 10 furlongs. So it's just been a great story. It would have been, from a sporting point of view, how great would it have been to see him continue on and see, maybe under the right circumstances, maybe being trained longer with the goal of going 10, to see what he could have done. But that's just stuff to speculate about on radio shows, unfortunately.
Exactly, exactly. It's the conversation fodder. What else? Obviously, the Hidden Scroll storyline is going to take off from here. Bricks and Mortar reengages and basically resumes his career at a high level and is going to be a nice addition. In fact, on that front, I thought it was a great weekend overall, not just in Florida, but in a few other spots where the Philly and Mare Sprint Division got three prominent winners. We got Midnight Bisou back running. Monomoy Girl arrived at Oak Lawn yesterday and is ready to pick up the ball and run for her 4-year-old season. It's really an interesting juncture what's happened with Pegasus, because the Eclipse Awards earlier in the week put a bow on the previous year, and then you really feel like, okay, now 2019 is engaged. But at the same time, with horses like Accelerate and City of Light running their last races, that also fits into the, packaging up 2018 and putting it on the shelf, as I say every year, in that storage facility with the Ark of the Covenant from Indiana Jones.
It does exist. The event exists in this weird place where it's at once closing day and opening day, right? You don't see that too often. I can't think of another sport where we have that. But all in all, from a sporting perspective, the things that stick out to me the most, obviously the big race, and then the way that the felt like there was some Derby, a lot more Derby chatter than I expected on Saturday night on Sky Sports Racing because of the Hidden Scroll effort. And what that says about that horse's talent. For Bill Mott, obviously he can get a first-time start already, but not always known for having them be that speedy. And my case that I made on the show that I'm writing about in my first piece for the other At the Races is that suggests to me that this is a horse who's doing that on his natural talent and ability, as opposed to a horse who's been drilled to be able to break like that and cruise like that and finish like that. Obviously, Mott, somebody who's more known for bringing horses along slowly. So whatever benefits he may have had from the racetrack or the slop, to me, the bigger story is I think that this horse, as he continues to work with his trainer, is going to have more to find that should counterbalance any benefits he might have gotten from that stuff. I see him as a serious Derby player, and as long as 14-1 in the markets over there, I was telling folks you could do a lot worse. Not necessarily cut in line to bet type stuff, but I mean, based on the figure, based on the appearance the horse made, based on pedigree, the proverbial could be any kind. And I was pretty positive when they were quizzing me. It's kind of fun over there, just like with their racing. The race ends, you see something amazing, and then the first questions are, okay, what's the price for the next race? Or in this case, a few races down the line. But we got to play that game a little bit more than I thought we would Saturday night. The other interesting thing I thought was actually how well the O'Brien horses ran. Now, I get it, they were bet to be serious contenders, but I just wasn't sure what kind of form these horses were going to be in coming up to the USA in the middle of winter in a race that was announced so late. There wasn't like some long-term plan to bring over the likes of Hunting Horn and Magic Wand. And to see them both run so well, I think it might just make some other European Irish, English connections pay a lot of attention, pay a lot more attention to this Pegasus turf race next year. We'll see what happens with the purse. But, I mean, even at a fraction, well, not maybe not a fraction, but even at a significantly lower number, it would seem like it might make sense to point to this for some of the bigger yards over there, despite the odd time of the year. I wonder if people won't take notice and start thinking ahead already to the Pegasus turf in 2020 based on that.
Well, I think they're the organization is going to have to take a longer look, given the way that field basically was assembling passers-by,
right,
down the stretch to just grab anybody that was willing to run. I think that they really began to wonder if it was worth doing. We'll see what their we'll see what their thought process is going forward. They certainly on the dirt race, this felt like the most cohesive. And I know T.D. Thornton wrote something about the Thornton and Bob Ehalt are fascinated by this thing. It's like a test tube baby for them. TD wrote about it, and I'm sure Ehalt will too. This felt like the most cohesive approach. The $100,000 down payment, to secure a spot, and then the confirmation, as things got closer, that seemed to be much more of a reasonable and successful set of parameters to get in the horses involved and to put together this good, this field that was the most complete field. I think in retrospect, it really ended up coming down to, frankly, the top three horses. Tom's the Tot, I think was a horse that you could have folded in with some expectation. But, really it boiled down to what it looked like on paper when they opened the gates.
I think that's a good assessment. And I think as an event as a whole, there is a work in progress, a little bit of a work in progress feel to all the financial machinations. But I think for me as a racing fan, I like the place in the calendar is just, it's just so perfect, and it's so nice. As much as I'm lamenting, oh, this is the last time we'll see these two horses, it's so nice to get the one more shot out of the likes of Accelerate and City of Light. And I think that there may be some more kinks to be worked out, but the concept of this post-BC championship type race is it's very appealing to me, and I've enjoyed it when I first heard of the concept 4 years ago, or whenever it was that it was first announced. I don't think I realized how much I'd end up enjoying these first few runnings. And some of that, of course, is a tribute to the fact that we've gotten to see these Breeders' Cup champions come back and just confirm their form in it. But I think there's more to it than just the specifics of the horses who've won it. I think it's the timing, and it's coming at this stage, as you point out, where the calendar has turned and we're ready to have some big level racing in the new year. So there's so many positives with the event, and I hope the turf race, I hope it's a case of tweaking and marketing and doing it better than throwing out the baby with the bathwater, though I certainly get what you're saying in terms of the money given away versus the field assembled.
I do think back to, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it might have been an Eclipse Award ceremony. One of those early ceremonies at Gulfstream when Frank Stronach had the opportunity to, make the sort of those welcome and thanks for coming remarks. And he referenced the concept, and everybody in the aftermath was like, What is he talking about? what is he talking about? This $12 billion raid. What are you talking about, Frank? And everybody thought it was nuts. And then suddenly, then there was like no mention of it for like 18 months. And all of a sudden, there it was. Now it's a fixture. It's pretty funny.
It is amazing how these things happen, and it also shows the positives of really kicking the tires on an idea and being willing to tweak an initial concept to make something innovative work, rather than, I think, unfortunately, a lot of times in the industry there are, I mean, we all, racing can make you cynical, right? And sometimes people's first reactions are going to be to see what isn't going to work, or to be a little bit cynical or negative about something. But sometimes the ideas are good enough and strong enough, and people work hard enough, they can turn into something that can become a positive for the game. And I think that's what's happened here.
Well, Pete, it's funny. We're getting ready to turn our attention to Vegas, and we're heading out next week. I think we put the finishing touches on arrangements for you to come, and there were some developments as part of Pegasus. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the new star in the galaxy from Saturday, that being Preston Sims, his daring decision making down the stretch and in the finale, a $1,400 try that wins him the Pegasus betting challenge, and with it an NHC seat. And I didn't realize it was player's choice, so he's parlaying it right into an NHC seat. So he's going to try to get that. And we've talked about that before, the momentum, and of course the other momentum. The Maven, we talked about David Goodfriend and, his miraculous rush to the tour title. And he's coming in hot to NHC as well. And I'm just looking at my Facebook memories, which is dotted with the Matisse win from 2 years ago. I've got it's exactly 3 years ago, I should say, and it was on January 30th, 2016, and all these pictures are popping up with Duke and Paul and Chick and everybody. It's kind of funny. So starting to look forward to next week.
It's going to be great, and I'll start off by thanking you, Steve, and our friends at the NTRA for helping make arrangements to get me out there. It was looking dodgy for a minute, but thanks to your support, I'm going to be able to be out there with you, and I can't wait. It's been so much fun the last few years getting to do that coverage, and not only talking about what's going on in the specifics of the tournament as it happens, but also interviewing players and getting to meet so many players and making friends. It's sort of, for somebody who makes a part of his living by interfacing with horse players, it's one-stop shopping for me. I won't find a better crew, not to mention some interesting industry people to hang out with as well. But I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I feel like every year the coverage has gotten better, and I think it's going to be the same. Do you know the hours you'll be set up when you're getting into Vegas and all that stuff yet?
I think I fly Wednesday, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it's the usual. Obviously the Thursday and Friday morning shows are the usual. Then we'll kick into Friday coverage in mid-afternoon, probably in the 2 to 6 range. And then, the similar schedule, the 5 or 6 hours that we do both Saturday and Sunday.
It's great. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm definitely interested in helping. It's always a little tricky when you're trying to line up the player interviews, because you never know exactly when somebody's going to have something they really need to be focused on. But as much as possible, we'll try to line up some of the players who folks are used to hearing from. We've had a lot of great stars drop by over the years, none greater than our man Marvin and that segment from last year, which remains one of my favorite pieces of broadcasting I've ever been a part of. An old friend of the Matisse's telling fun Vegas stories and stories from his life. But there's a lot to be learned, and we get into not just tournament stuff, but bet construction and bankroll management, the mental side of horse playing, handicapping itself. There's plenty of time between races. Well, there's always races going on, but plenty of time between the storylines we're following to fill in with a lot of other horse player relevant content. And I know a lot of players who are out there and can't listen because they're playing in the tournament come back and listen to the whole thing afterwards. I would like to encourage folks, even if you think, oh, you know, I'm not that much of a tournament player. If you're an At the Races listener and you're a horse player, tune in and check out this coverage because I think you'll find something that you'll enjoy. And I'll be flying out. I've got some other family commitments during the week, so I won't get out until the tournament starts. But, I mean, I should be there from pretty early Friday, Steve, and I'm willing to hang and help out as much as you'll have me. Really looking forward to this this pulling a rabbit out of a hat that you did to get me back out there in Vegas. I'm now allowing myself to get excited about it.
There you go. Well, you know, one of the things that will certainly come up, I think, the difference in the formats, and of course the way in which the NHC has, you know, that certain purity of picking winners and, you know, and some of the strategy just involved in that, because it was always, it's only recently that the name change in the National Horse Players Championship as opposed to the National Handicapping Championship and the original format and concept that Steve Crist and the Daily Racing Form was, you know, so closely associated with it. The storyline, Pete, from the Pegasus, the live money tournament, and some murmuring that I, you know, sort of picked up on, it's a radio chatter, as it were. the concern that even with some betting minimums per race, that everybody basically was sitting on their bankroll, and more in these live monies, everybody is just sort of sitting and playing minimums, you know, maybe a few isolated focus horses that some people like during the course of the day, but basically everybody is just loading up and waiting for nightcaps.
And it's a one race contest. I mean, it's a legitimate concern, especially when, and we saw this, and fortunately it's been corrected, but in those there was the spate of contests for a little while, culminating with the Breeders' Cup controversy, where you literally didn't have to bet at all until the last race, even if only some people knew about it. But it's still, there's something baked into the concept of the current live bank format where that's going to be, that's very often going to be an issue, and it could be solved. I think there's a few different ways to do it. Probably the way that comes to mind to me that I wouldn't mind seeing is to, you just have to make people bet more earlier and make that fight to preserve bankroll, to have 4,000 at the end to make these all-in bets that have won it the 2 years, make that hard to do. And then all of a sudden you'll have people making those pushes throughout the contest. And I'd like to see somebody try that format. With the World Horse Players Tour, we tried to get around it by the traditional live bankroll portion. You only have to be in the top eight, change the dynamic a little bit. But obviously, that's a different format. That's made for TV. You're not going to see Tracks doing that every single live bankroll contest they do, or even any bankroll contest they do that isn't a World Horse Players Tour event. I do think it's worth somebody taking a look at ways of making it more difficult, having to, and you might be able to do it in a way that ends up being an economic positive for the track by making people have to churn more money for the ability to get to the last race and push all the money in. If a certain amount of the bankroll is put aside that you don't have to bet it and you can still play 4,000 in the last, well, surprise, surprise, a lot of people are just going to play 4,000 in the last. So it's worth discussing. I don't think it diminishes the achievement of what Preston did or what Eddie Olczyk did. Everybody's playing by the same rules.
Oh, sure.
They're the ones that got it done. But I don't think it's wrong to chatter about it and see if there might not be a better way in the future. Our buddy Joe Applebaum likes to say that if contests were a baseball game, we're in the third inning still. There's still changes that can happen and things that can evolve to make contests even as big as they are, as important of a driver of income as they are. They can be better. They can be more popular. They can do more to help racing. And I think these kind of conversations hopefully will help that be the case. And, you know, I know there's other players, a lot of listeners have good ideas about this stuff too. I'm always interested in hearing them, continuing the conversation, both in my appearances here and also over at the In the Money Players podcast. So folks should feel free to hit me up either on my blog, inthemoneypodcast.com, or just on Twitter, @loomsboldly, and keep these conversations going, because I do think there's probably a better way.
Well, and what's funny about this, to me, is the rise of the live money, and, you know, we've been talking about it, you know, for an extended period now, and the preference from so many players toward the live money concept because of their consternation with the desperate Annies in the win place contests format, you know, basically just taking long shots in out of desperation in the last couple of races. And you know, then Pick and Pray sort of answered that to some degree, that you had to make your commitment, and you know, you didn't have the option of changing bet preference later, you know, selection later. But it how is this really that different than what people complain about in that format?
I agree with you that from a sort of, and I'm kind of hyperbolizing using the word, but from sort of an ethical or moral betting point of view, I don't think it's different at all, which is why I don't understand when people get so up in arms or so critical of mythical contests, because, you know, every format has its benefits, every format has its flaws. From talking to horse players, I think that the big difference and the reason why you'll still hear people complain about one and accept the other is in the mythical contest, people will end up on horses they would never have used in a million years. Whereas
right.
With the live bank format, it's a question, you're still betting horses you like, you're just leaving out some horses you like who would pay less. So I think that's why, because you're still betting your opinion in a way that you're kind of not as much in live bank. I think that's how some people justify it in their heads. But really, when you think about it, the rules of the game within a game are forcing you to do something you would never do if left to your own devices. And in that sense, people shouldn't feel too smug and superior about their preference for live bank. But I do think there's a little bit of a meaningful difference.
Well, it occurred to me. I mean, in passing, as I saw some back and forth, Tommy Masses had some things. Tommy said some things.
And, as usual.
Yeah, you're not gonna quell Tommy. I should reach here. And did you get a chance to look through your top finishers? Or I'll run this down again. Preston Sims, 157,000. David Rink, who was also playing at Gulfstream, 106,800, ended up second. Haven't heard his story. Frank Magui, and the Magui team was well represented. They dot the landscape in that leaderboard, 97,784. Pat Gianforte, who forged to the lead late and looked like he might have a nice handle on things going into the nightcap, 76,400 for fourth. Sheikh Fahad playing at Santa Anita. Pat was playing on ExpressBet. Sheikh Fahad was at Santa Anita, 70,382. Jim Benes, just has really had a good year, just under 70,000 for him to be sixth. Sammy Richmond, who had been a longtime leader throughout the day, he had been first or third pretty much all day long, and a very good performance from Sammy Richmond. He was playing on ExpressBet, 65,652. Paul Scott on ExpressBet, 46,900. Nick Tamaro, 44,600 himself for ninth, and Shane Muscarello, 41-1. John Nichols, we talked about. John made a bold move mid-card, fourth and fifth races, and then hung in from that point. A lot of big names, well-known names. Kenny Jordan, part of the Jersey Mafia. Kenny was 28th. Philly Joe, 29th. Ross Gallo, 22nd. Adam Aiken, who jumped up to the leaderboard, Pete, fairly late at around the 8th or 9th race. Adam Aiken made a big move. He and it was, let me see, I don't know if I've got all of the recorded spots, but there was both Adam Aiken and Adam Kluger. Kluger was playing at Santa Anita. He's a music industry exec. And Adam Aiken was at Gulfstream. They jumped ahead of Sammy maybe around race 9 or 10 and both had strong showings. It was a fun follow on Saturday.
It's such a great tournament. That idea of having the prize money added, it's just so horse player friendly. And it's no surprise to see some of the best names out there in the contest world, people who you see at the top of leaderboards all the time with such good showings. Benes comes to mind, of course. Nick Tamaro, Patian Forde. I hate to leave out. There's so many more I shouldn't have started listing, but just to name a few. And then also great to see some less familiar names like David Rink, who you mentioned, and even our winner, whose name I had seen, but I've yet to have the pleasure of interviewing. I'm going to go back and listen to more of your coverage on him, and we'll get him on the In the Money Players podcast later this week as well. It's always nice to see that blend of new names and old favorites, if you will, and I'm so glad to see massive growth this year in the second year of the contest, and I want Stronach Group to be rewarded for making that commitment to players. And, Ray Arsenault and his team and the great job they've done encouraging this contest along. Hopefully we're going to see more of these contests where the house is putting up the entry fee, essentially, in the future. And I'm excited to learn some more stories from this year's Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship.
We are too, and we'll get a couple more pieces from Nick probably on Friday when we have our game builder segment. And I also wanted, I did want to reach out to a couple of other players that were involved, and we'll certainly get them on in Vegas. Meaning that'll be the best opportunity to to get some stories. The thing that's amazing to me is, they, as much volume and as much churn as the players, and they had there was 190 entrants. I mean, they really had a successful enrollment for this, and I know they were thrilled from that standpoint. But even with that quantity, Pete, there's not enough churn from them to offset the prize money. I mean, the Stronach's going in their pocket for this, because they're not paying for it out of the handle.
That's interesting. I haven't done all the math on it. I mean, I would assume our theory with World Horse Players Tour is if you get the numbers just right, you can get to a point where you have a contest that pays for itself in the churn, especially if you can get, as I'm assuming they do in Florida, the horsemen to kick in some of their percentage as well. But it all depends on that $12,000 you put up for the Pegasus. Some players might start off bad and you know, put the stick away, as it were, and not even churn that bankroll one time. Others, I'm sure, Jonathan Kinchins of the world, are turning it over three times with all their various all-in pushes. So it's hard to figure out exactly how the finances work. I'll say this, I do believe there is a magic way where we can make this work, where it's a positive expectation for the players, or very close to a positive expectation for the players, and the house is actually making more money by bringing the players into the facility to bet the golden dollars. One of the things we've been working on for these last few months is talking to potential industry partners to figure out what that balance is going to be for tracks and players for the World Horse Players Tour when it reappears. Obviously, this Pegasus contest is a great case study for us to look at, and those folks are very friendly. I don't imagine they'd be too cagey about the numbers. It's probably information that we can get and may even have by the time we sit down in Vegas, and we can talk about this a little bit more with some data in front of us.
I'd be curious, it might be close. I just was punching up, you know, 12,000 times 190, you know, and then some, you know, some to what? 2.5, 3.5, I don't know. You know, whatever.
That's the tricky part, is figuring out what number and who gets
exactly
what of the betting dollar in Florida, and what, if anything, the horsemen are kicking in. But one of the things
it might
that
be close.
It could be. And one of the things I think about in terms of World Horse Players Tour, keeping in mind that asking the horsemen to give up a percentage, asking the track to set it up like that, the added benefit of getting a 60-minute TV commercial for your track,
right,
and our game, you know, there's a marketing benefit to that as well. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's a way to just make it work on the raw numbers as well. I'm not sure if that's been achieved yet. But again, a lot of this stuff, it's a work in progress, and kudos to the people trying to do new and innovative things that not only help the game as a whole, but specifically are friendly to horse players. It's great to see. I feel like more attention in the last few years has been paid to us, you know, being one of the engines that really drives the game.
Pete Fornitzel, everybody, looms boldly, and he will be looming to Vegas, and will co-host the coverage from the Treasure Island, TI Vegas. Your address and hashtag NHC19, and we're days away, and looking forward to getting out there. And I guess, let me think, Pete. I guess probably if you're going to be doing some, maybe we'll just save you. Yeah, we'll talk to you in Vegas on Friday instead of Wednesday.
That makes sense. If you need me, though, you always know where to find me. I always appreciate the chance to come on and talk contests and racing and everything else that seems to come up on these appearances, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And I will send you a couple of new cuts that we've added to rotation. Came up with some interesting, couple of interesting new things that I think you'll
enjoy.
I
like the canned heat cover, the going up the country. That was pretty cool.
That's a family. That's a Welch or something family that I haven't put that in yet, but we may, I may.
I think it's worthy.
All right. Then in it goes into the stacks of wax here at WATR.
Perfect for Saratoga, you know, so the going up the country.
Up the country.
Yeah.
Well, you better not go up the country without a ski mask today. We're headed to negative range. Pete Fornitzel, everybody. We'll be with Pete in Vegas. Looking forward to it. We'll take a timeout, top of the hour. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid Fernando joins us next in a little bit. Dr. Alday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Brian Sanfratello from Pennsylvania Breeding as well. And Seth Merrow, stay with us.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.